Check this out.
It is time.
Check it out, y'all.
You are now about to witness.
And it goes a little something like this.
Alexander Ovechkin curl and drag to the back end. He scores! Simply sensational! Brodeur looking for the goal. Down the ice. Score! Bartek Brodeur!
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome back to another edition of the Game Time Decision Podcast. Colton Prale joining you as always. This time, the inventor of game score, Dom Lucijan, is joining me. Dom, I butchered it. I am so sorry, but I tried my best.
It's okay. Everyone does.
Thank you so much for coming on, though, man. It's a pleasure having you on. This is one of the things that I really wanted to incorporate into this series when I saw you come up with it and just how quickly it caught on and how many people were using it and just the different ways you've implemented it. I thought, you know, there was no way I could leave this out of the series. So I really appreciate you coming on.
Thanks for having me, man.
All right, so I start these podcasts off with the same two questions to everybody, and it's just for people who are new to either this series or to the analytics community in general, which is basically like, if you had to describe where we've been, where we are now, and where we're going as far as analytics and hockey, how would you do that?
That's a tough question. I feel like we're at the point where it's hard to come up with new things because the data we have is not that great, but there's still, I guess, small steps we're taking to make things better. And I know there's some people out there who were there from the very beginning who think that it was better back in their day, which is kind of funny because this has only been going on for like a decade or so. But I feel like the community is stronger than it's ever been. There's always new people coming in with fresh ideas, thinking of new things to understand the game better.
No, I have to say I agree with that that analysis. The other question I always ask people is, who would you recommend reading for someone looking to either get into hockey stats or maybe they're just starting and they want to, you know, really take the deep dive? Who would you say, you know, this is a must name, or this is a name that you just absolutely have to read their work?
In terms of names, I would definitely have to name drop Manny from Who Made Corsica, Don't Tell Me About Heart, Micah in Effective Math, Matt Cain would probably be the big four. And I feel like there may be a fifth that I'm missing, and now I'll feel really bad if they are listening and think, why am I not part of this big five? But those would be the four that come to mind immediately. For people just starting, I think the best thing to do would be to read the intro on Corsica on all, like, it's an intro to analytics. It's written by Made Up Call. It's probably one of my favorite things that was written as sort of like a starting guide to analytics.
Yeah, that is, it's a fantastic article. And if you want more from Matt, from Manny, from any of the people that Dom just mentioned, you can go back through our past episodes. All of them have been on fantastic interviews, each of them. They shared a wealth of knowledge. But Dom, let's get into this and into more what you do specifically. And we'll start it off with just the primer. What is game score? Because that seems to be the biggest thing you're known for right now.
Basically, it's a stat that I ripped off from basketball to, I guess, measure how good a player's game was, because that was something that's always interested me, who had the best game. And people would always quote who had the most points, who had a good Corsi game, who looked good. And it was always just sort of an incomplete picture. So I wanted to weigh all these things that we already find important and put it all in together into one numbers soup type thing. And that's basically what it is.
That sounds a little similar to Manny's K or Dawson's War. How is yours different?
Mine is different in the fact that theirs is much better. It accounts for context much better. Like, I know in Dawson's, in both of theirs, they account for everyone who's on the ice when they're measuring shot rate stats, and game score is meant to be extremely simple and just use plain old Corsi. So in that sense, theirs is a lot better. The way they did it was obviously measured probably better, because mine was, this is how important these things are to goals. So this is the way, that's just how it is. Mm-hmm. Whereas they've done a lot of testing on it and whatnot, but I've measured game score to war. I think when Dawson first released it, and it lined up pretty well. So I feel like if Dawson doesn't have war available, which he won't all the time, he, like, even at the start of the year, it takes a lot of data to run war. Mm-hmm. And also, I'm assuming that Dawson will not be with us much longer, and we will be without war again. But it was pretty close, so if you have a good game score, you'll probably have a good war. There's obviously be differences between the two numbers, but it'll be a rough estimate of value. And like all three numbers, it's a good starting point for how good these players are.
Now, obviously, in the name, it comes across that it's more of an immediate number rather than a season-long thing, but that's not the case, is it? I mean, you can look at these numbers over a player's a career, theoretically, and see how they're performing.
Yeah, definitely, because the main thing when I was testing it was, do these results make sense? Because a player who has a good game, a good player will have a lot of good games, and so their average game score throughout the season would be high. And so when I looked at it, I saw Crosby, Ovechkin, Carlson, Bergeron, Doughty, guys like that, all the top. So it made sense to me. So, I mean, it could be used as a season-long number. If war is available, use war. If war is not available, game score is probably good enough. That's my motto.
Great motto. Were there any players that, while you were creating this stat, just really surprised you? Like, oh, you know, I wouldn't have thought, you know, Derek McKenzie had 20 good games in a season, but so he does.
There's so many games in a season that I haven't looked at that many people at like a game by game level, but I'm always like, I've looked at a lot this year, I guess the season long numbers, and I'm always amazed by how high Victor Arvidsson and Connor Sheary are. Mm-hmm. And they're just like, they benefit a lot from who they play with, but even Arvidsson, I think, has the highest game score of him, Forsberg, and Johansson this year, because I think his shot rate stats are a bit better than theirs. I'm not 100% sure, because
that sounds right.
A bit, but yeah, Arvidsson is just amazing this year, and Connor Sheary, I mean, he's a higher points per game than, I think, a lot. Like, I saw a tweet today that he had a higher points per game than guys like, I can't remember. I know Tarasenko was on the list, and when you have a higher points per game than Tarasenko, that's pretty insane.
It wasn't too long ago that he, Malkin, and Crosby, I think, were 1-2-3 in the NHL. Mm-hmm. It was something insane like that. Those two names, I'm not surprised hearing them, but yeah, when you bring them up, they're not, you know, the first thing that pops to mind when you're like, who are some of the best players in the NHL? Yeah, it's neat that game score agrees with those numbers when they do so well in things like K and WAR as well. Another way you've used game scores, you've incorporated these stats into a prediction model that you tend to tweet out frequently, which seems to be the way that the public is going. So do you anticipate we're going to see a lot more models similar to the ones that you've created that you tweet out in the future?
Definitely. I think that's where a lot of people are going, because we always talk about, I guess, how good things predict the future. And that's why Corsi became so popular, because you can look at a team's Corsi and say, this team will probably be a lot better going forward or whatnot. But it was an incomplete picture, because Corsi only describes so much of the game. Like, you'd obviously do well using it, but you can do better by incorporating more things. So we see a lot of models lately on, I guess, predicting things at the game level, and I think that's where things are going, because that's at the root of what we're trying to do. We're trying to predict how good teams are, how good players are, and by guessing how they'll do at each game, you could have a pretty large data set of how good your predictions were.
Now, obviously, models all have certain teams that maybe they rate more highly than others, or that they don't do the same, they don't give the same advantage to as other teams. I know yours, for some reason, really likes the Jets. What is it about Winnipeg that you think your model rates so highly? And why is this something that we see across models or in models across the board?
With the Jets, it's tough because they have really, really good players. And I know Dawson tweeted his war rankings and he had the Jets even higher than I do. So, I mean, their players are good. You got to wonder what's going on when you have a top six that has Blake Wheeler, Mark Scheifele, Patrick Laine, Nikolaj Ehlers, Ryan Little, and Matthew Perreault. I mean, that's the top six that I don't think many teams in the league can match up against. Mm-hmm. And it's tough because, like, they should be a lot better. They're just not. And their bottom six is atrocious. Their defensive depth outside of Bufflin and Trouba and I guess Morrissey is getting better these days, but it's just not really there. And I don't understand how Paul Maurice is still coaching, to be honest. And it's not because my model loves them, just that they should be, even if I have them too high, they should be better than a bottom five team, which is what they are.
Yeah.
The other thing, though, for why my model would be high on them is because the worst thing they're at is defense. And I know GameScore tends to underrate that aspect of players. And the way I did things was I would adjust players for aid going forward. And I think when you have a lot of young players, it may overrate them. That's what happened with, I think, the Jets and the Leafs. And a team with old players like the Sharks gets underrated. So I've since toned that down a bit. So I shouldn't be too high on the Jets going forward, but I'm still probably higher than most reasonable people would assume.
And that's an interesting comment that you just made about the adjusting for the aging curve, especially with an older team like San Jose. How do you think that, you know, they manage? Obviously, they have incredibly talented players who, you know, regardless of age, Joe Thornton is still going to be able to go tape to tape, blue line to blue line. He's just that fantastic. But how do you look at a team where you say, you know, yeah, this is an aging team, but they do have a ton of talent? How do you measure out and compare their ages to perhaps a younger, faster team with less talent?
Honestly, it's really tough because everyone also ages differently. You have guys who peak at 22, 23, 24, like most players do. And then you have guys like Joe Pavelski and Brad Marchand who somehow peak at 29, 30 and are having their best career, their mm-hmm. best seasons of their career. I mean, Pavelski for so long was like a 50, 60-point guy. And then suddenly from age 29 to 34, he's one of the best wingers in the league. And that, a lot of that has to do with Thornton, who is also another ageless wonder. And like, it's just very tricky dealing with how different players age differently. Honestly, I'm not even sure what to say, because it's hard, because it's usually do it based on a population average of how everyone has aged at that age, and it just.
And that's what
so
I was wondering.
Player to player.
That's what I was wondering. If you're eventually just creating these bins for, you know, this is how players typically play going into their, you know, 30 to 35 years versus their 25 to 30 years. And then these guys, or in this case, this team, San Jose, is just more of an outlier who perhaps isn't mm-hmm. adjusting as well to fit that curve.
Yeah, definitely. I think at the start of the year, it's definitely important to age adjust. I know for Thornton, I think he's on pace for, I think, 55 to 60 points. I'm not 100% sure, but at the start of the year, if you didn't age adjust, his point projection would have been around 70. And after age adjusting, it would go down to, or I think it was actually like 72 to 75 because of his big season last year. Mm-hmm. And if you age adjusted, it would go down to about 60 to 65, which is the range he's in now. So I think it's important at the beginning of the season, but going through the season, I feel like there needs to be don't know, let, like, it needs to tone down as it goes. I don't know. It's boggling my mind right now, like, what I should do, because I know it's important, but it's had results where teams like Winnipeg look like one of the league's best teams when they are showing their youthful inexperience.
It's interesting to hear you kind of talk through this issue, just because it does show the, you know, the complication of models. But part of the push behind all of these models has been from the gambling community, and I know that's something you're fairly active in as well. So how are you making your predictions personally? Are you doing it off of game score? Have you devised a personal model that you're keeping, you know, in the closet back there that you just go in and check on for the games? How do you do it?
Basically, I take the last 3 years for every single player in the league, and I get a weighted average of them in each stat that goes into game score, and then I regress each of those terms to get a projected game score of how good each player should be. So if a player is having a career year but wasn't that great last year, it'll take a bit of time to figure out he's that good. Or another way to look at it is he's not gonna be that good forever, and he may regress back to the level he was at before. So that's why I use 3 years for a stat like this, and it's weighted towards most recent years. So this year would be the most heaviest, next year or last year was second heaviest, and so on. So I get a projected game score for every player in the league, and then I look at, I get a value for each player, and then I guess I add it all up for every team to get a team strength, which I tweet out every Wednesday and get yelled at immensely for it, which is weird because they see my probabilities every day that these that are based on these power rankings, and I don't get yelled at for those, and they've been pretty accurate all year. But once they see why different teams are rated the way they are, I somehow get a million mentions, and I can tell you right now that every Wednesday I want to quit Twitter because it's so annoying dealing with the same thing every single day.
I love that it's a weekly thing and people still haven't learned this deep into the season. Do you think there's going to be a larger market for what you're creating, you know, on a private scale, whether that's in, you know, Vegas and it's betting companies trying to devise better odds so that they beat the market, or whether it's from private people, you know, paying into an algorithm that gives them the best odds?
I already know some people in the gambling community because I'm sort of, I guess, doing both. I'm gambling and I guess making models for hockey. So I know some people in there who bet extremely large sums of money and they have models of their own. So I definitely think that's something that people do. I know a guy who found someone who invested in his model and is doing pretty well for himself because of that. So I definitely think that's something that may happen for a few other people based on a proven track record of beating bookmakers regularly.
Interesting. So you don't think then this will expand to be a larger market? This has to be something that's, you know, kind of kept small and quiet to be successful.
It really depends. I feel like it should be kept small and quiet to be successful because you always want to get the best line. Mm-hmm. Like as soon as the limits open on the market and you can bet as like almost like I think like $6,000, the lines move so quickly because these people are right on top of it and betting large sums like right away, and the lines move. So you need to be as quiet as possible about what edge you have because the line will disappear quickly. But I do think there is a market to do this, I guess, at a larger scale. I'm not really sure what to add to that.
No, that's a fantastic answer. I mean, what about on the flip side? Is this something that, you know, someone could take to, say, a Bodog and just be like, here, I've got this model. It does this line. Right now, your lines aren't fantastic. I can improve them if you pay me.
It's difficult because I know that, like, the biggest bookmaker is Pinnacle, and they have their own already successful algorithms for determining these odds. And it's difficult because they don't necessarily need to be the most right. They need to be, they need to have enough money on both sides so they don't lose. And so they need to have lines where, I guess, the sharp people and the public people, I guess, even money on both sides. Honestly, I feel weird talking about this as if I know a lot about it. I don't know that much. I just know they have their own algorithms and they're trying to be right in the middle and get a market that's as efficient as possible. I think they've mostly been capable of doing that this year. I know there's games where there's big edges, but for the most part, they've been mostly on point.
Honestly, I think you've done a perfectly fine job explaining this. And as I listen to you walk through it, it does make sense what they're aiming for, because, you know, if you are bang on every time, eventually you're just not going to get the bets. And so it does make sense listening to you go through that and how you're explaining it. So A plus job. I think you did fine. Move on a little bit. Go to the hockey news. They didn't have a ton of in-depth analysis the way that you're presenting it now. And I don't want to say in-depth analysis because that's the wrong way to phrase it. They didn't have the same amount of statistical analysis that is, you know, up to date and with current trends before you got there. So what was it like going into that environment and how has it been?
Well, I literally got there at like the perfect time. I was in my fourth year of journalism at Ryerson and we had to do an internship for 6 weeks. And I was supposed to have an internship at the Hockey News a year before, but they changed their policies where it had to be for like a course credit because they couldn't do it for free anymore or something like that. So I'm like, okay, I'll hit you up in fourth year when I have this opportunity. So I did, and I got there, and it's not that they were against the analytics movement. It's that everyone starts somewhere, and they've been doing this all their life where they didn't know statistical analysis could be done. So I know when I was there, they were looking into how to improve their content more in that range and understand it more so they can, I guess, write better hobby stories. They've always been interested in trying to further how they understand the game. I know when I was there, they were really open-minded to what I was saying. When I first started, it was mostly editorial, so I wasn't writing anything. But once I realized that this is something they were looking for and it was something I was sort of already doing, I realized I could sort of fill a niche. And so I started pitching things to them while I was interning and they liked it. So once I left, I pitched more things and for some reason they never said no. And they said, here's some money for it. And that's sort of how it started. And now I write there once a week and my playoff probabilities are on the site, and it's just a weird thing.
It's interesting to hear you know, how open they were to that, because I did exactly what you did, same thing. I finished a journalism program, I did an internship, mine was at Sportsnet, and on the digital side, so doing some writing for them, and yeah, it was the same sort of thing where they were looking to fill that niche. And I thought it was so interesting there, because you're filled, you know, that building is all of it. It's the TV side is there, you know, Tim and Sid are there. You're all in the same building. So there's so many bright, intelligent, you know, sport minds who look at the game in so many different ways. And so the conversations that we would have when, you know, you're trying to explain, okay, like this is how I think about the game and this is why I think about the game and this is the reason that these things matter in my opinion, would get really, really interesting. And there were certain people who were fantastic about it, and there were others who were, you know, less fantastic about it. But it's interesting to hear that as an organization, they were so open to adapting and to looking at the game in a new manner, just to present that light to the people who care about it. So I think that's pretty interesting to me. One final thing that I want to get to, and that's just plugs. Anything you want to get out there, you know, your Twitter, website, whatever it is, now's the time.
I don't know if I have anything to plug. I guess just follow me on Twitter. I think I'm really funny. I think others may agree or disagree, but I think I'm funny. If you can spell my name, you can find me on Twitter. But maybe if you just type Dom and then L and then U and then S and then Z, my name will pop up as the only person with a name of that combination.
And for those who perhaps aren't going through that much trouble, Twitter handle is OMG at Stomy, correct?
That is incorrect, actually.
Oh, you changed my Twitter handle? Dumb.
I changed my Twitter handle to my real name, so it's much harder to find me now, I think, because it's not a snappy little nickname like that. But
wow. I was wondering why you weren't coming up. Okay. All right, well, there you go. You're gonna have to search his name. It will be in the title of this episode, so go off of that. He is a fantastic follow. I think you're funny at least half the time, so there you go. That's something. Dom, thanks so much for coming on the show today. Really appreciate it. It was fantastic talk. If you guys aren't following, you aren't reading his work, you aren't using his incredible, insightful betting odds, do all of those things because they are fantastic. If you like what you heard, you can check out this episode and all of our other episodes online on lastwordonhockey.com. Also on iTunes, on SoundCloud. Subscribe over there. Just search Game Time Decision Podcast. On Twitter, it's GTD_podcast. I am at Colton Prale. We'll see you next week.